Hi, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of Tech Can't Save Us podcast brought to you by Literal Humans. I'm solo today. As always, I am Paul David, co-founder and CEO of Literal Humans. My good buddy and co-founder, William Gadsby Pete, is onboarding a new client, a lovely new HR tech client. So sad to miss him today. You can see the seat next to me, but on the other side of the fern is empty. But we're joined today by a fantastic guest who's going to talk to us about some really interesting stuff in the space of AI and data solutions, Marie Smith, CIO, Chief Information Officer, and co-founder at Data360. Welcome to the show, Marie.
Thank you.
Really good to have you. We had a really great kind of like, well, we just chatted for 15 minutes bantering, and then we chatted a bit before about all the things. So we're warmed up here. So really happy to have you on the show.
And I'm going to say Paul David. I'm used to saying David because my co-founder's name is David.
You know, my whole life I get Paul, I get David sometimes. It just happens when you have one of those names with it's a first name and every name.
Everything. Your last name and your first name.
Yeah.
Your last name is the first name.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been getting David a lot more late. Like the past week, it's been like consistently David. So I don't know what's going on, but we'll take it. First things first, Marie, just like give our guests like just like, you know, a few sentence synopsis of like who you are, what you do. And yeah, just like just so they can be introduced to you at a high level.
Yeah. So like I'm a super nerd supreme, been programming since I was 9 years old, started because of my mom. You know, happy Women's History Month.
Happy Women's History Month. Yes.
And I had a sort of auspicious childhood that really led me to being an engineer through and through, which we'll probably get into in some way. I started out my career with a company called AOL. If you remember, You've Got Mail.
Of course. How can we forget?
went on to work with some other companies, Universal Studios, MicroStrategy, which is business intelligence, and two little weird startups called Twitter and Facebook.
Some lesser known tech entities, obviously.
Few weird little companies that nobody's heard of. That all led me to start Data360 with my co-founders after talking about data and this revolution that's happening right now. And we've been around 8 years. We've been talking about AI, and this is probably the first year people really know what we're talking about, kind of, sort of, because of ChatGPT. We have serviced over 10,000 customers. We're scaling up to service millions of customers this next couple of years, working with some bigger entities and agencies than Google and Microsoft.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, 10,000 is an incredible high watermark, and hopefully, you know, you make your bigger goal. So yeah, we wish you luck with that, of course.
Yeah, it was a good test.
Yeah. Well, good that you mentioned ChatGPT in your intro, because that's our first piece from Forbes here. And it combines two things, I guess you call them ideas, or, you know, they're actually practices. So AI and DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, and artificial intelligence on the front end there. And this piece, really interesting in Forbes from, I think it's from Sean Harper, who's kind of a famous DEI expert, just talks about ChatGPT influencing the authenticity of DEI communications from leaders. I think there was actually a recent case of a CEO of a company using ChatGPT to write, I think it was his, I would imagine it's his, but I'll just say their response to, you know, recent police brutality in the United States against Black folks, and sort of got caught up in that. But yeah, just curious to hear your perspective on like, how do we ensure the ethical and quote unquote authentic use of AI for communication workplace? And what do you think the implications are for DEI?
Yeah, there's a lot to that. So I think, you know, the biggest thing is we really have to have people that aren't so swayed by the people that fund them, and they actually can speak truth to power, which is very, very difficult because there's always a funder in the background that's sort of dictating how things go. How do we speak truth to power is going to be one of the biggest, I think, things that we focus on for the next, you know, several decades. The second thing is really making sure that if you can establish a truth to power dynamic and you have a team that actually supports your organization, then it's a matter of fairly sourcing data. So you have to be open to a wider amount of data outside of those authoritative sources. Like, we don't really know all the sources that ChatGPT was trained on, but I would guess that many of them were sort of the tried and true authoritative places. And some of the more authentic, less governed places for information to be, that, you know, where information is on the internet was not probably included. And so those are some of the things is you have to really cast a very wide net outside of the typical thoughts about where information comes from and where it should come from.
It's good that you mentioned bias in general, right? But like the second piece we had you read was from IBM, just talking about accounting for racial bias and machine learning models, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, you know, like I guess the question there is, you know, what do you think of the idea that like data itself can carry implicit bias? And I thought one of the more interesting, you know, elements of this piece from IBM was they were talking about specific projects meant to sort of remove bias from, you know, data sets that these machine learning tools are drawing from, and how, you know, you don't just need data science experts, you need linguistics experts and folks who understand the sort of cultural nuances that exist in language so that these data sets can be cleaned, quote unquote, as it were. So yeah, just super curious how you think about the how of, you know, removing racial bias from machine learning models specifically.
Yeah, part of it is, you know, kind of a third point, which is who do you have on the team? And you have to have people who represent a wide berth of the population, not just in the United States, but across, you know, because we're very narcissistic here, but across the whole planet, right? And how do you capture that data? Where does that data come from? You have to have four things. You have to have a qualitative approach. You have to have a quantitative approach. You have to have a latitudinal approach. You have to have a longitudinal approach. If you don't have all four of those things, you're messed up when it comes to building models, right? And so mostly we have right now is a quantitative approach, right? I have so many records. I've looked at so many records and that's how I've trained my model. But there's not necessarily always a qualitative approach. It's just filters that engineers have built in because they think they should be there. And there's this theory of trust and safety across most of the platforms that are governed by mostly white males and, you know, with the usual smattering of people of color and women, which all that just doesn't work, right? Is you have to have, you know, you have to have an actual scientific approach. It has to actually be neutral. You actually have to be able to seek truth of power, and you actually have to have a diverse team from a diverse number of backgrounds.
I appreciated what you said too about like, I think the qualitative approach and like really thinking deeply about like what different groups of people bring to various sciences, various disciplines and things like that. I got put onto, I don't know if you follow the In Those Genes, Genes with a G podcast, but it's an award-winning podcast about the genomes of Black folks infused with hip-hop, but like connecting. And obviously like, you know, among the sciences, like you like genetics, right, has been one of the most racist, arguably like professions, you know, in history, but it's really like getting into it. And it's, you know, the podcast is led by a Black woman, and just like, you know, seeing her sort of process this information and understand through her unique perspective, I think is so powerful and so rare that we get that. But I just think like, yes, like more of that, more of those types of angles into, okay, you know, we recognize what the profession has been, but, you know, we can sort of take it in a different direction and actually like understand real value out of what folks are bringing. Folks are bringing a different lens to these different professions and, you know, not coming at it from a problematic racialized lens. So I think that's what you said is really powerful there. One of the pieces we shared with you was from Black Girl Nerds about, and that's like just the title of the piece itself is a provocative, interesting question. Can AI technology improve the lives of Black women? So I'll just like leave that out to you there and dangle that and see, get your perspective. Like, what's your experience? Like, is AI starting to improve your life? Like, do you think the prospects for it to do that at all? Or, you know, does that make sense for you? Does that resonate with you?
Yeah, it does, actually. AI and apps and software have definitely improved the quality of my life, even as I also am participating in the building in the ecosystem and improving the ecosystem. And our company also works with a lot of Black women through our online incubator. And I would say, yes, it does improve their lives in such that we don't typically have social capital and social information circles to rely on from our families to help us evolve as business people or help us uplift ourselves economically. And so, you know, what I've seen is specifically with Black women, Black people, and women in general, is we've been able to form these social circles through technology that have solved that problem. So I would say, yeah, AI has done that, you know, through, you know, just basic search engines, through apps, through now I've seen a lot of Black women entrepreneurs dive right into ChatGPT. They're totally excited.
Can we think of AI as like this rising tide that, yes, it has, there's bias, there's algorithmic bias, which we'll talk about in a second, but like on some level, it's lifting all boats because it's providing people with this platform of work being done for you. I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, and really, you know, something that I want to venture to measure at some point is most of women, Black women in particular, don't have teams, right? They don't have staff. They don't have the financing for it, or they don't have the acumen to know how to build a team. And AI is filling in that gap. Or alternatively, like for us, you know, just the pure disrespect without missing words that we get from team members, you know, or potential team members as managers and executives, it's easier to go to a machine sometimes and get things done, or go to an app and get things done, or go to an app technology-driven service to get things done, because you just don't get the resistance and the static from just being a boss, right? And being a person of color or being a woman.
Yeah. And it's particularly hard on like a small team. Like we feel this, we're only 9 people, but like, you know, if you have a very small team and one person's not pulling their weight, A, it's like immediately obvious. Mm-hmm. B, you know, that weight is going to fall to other members of that team pretty quickly, because it's going to be, you know, really apparent that like someone needs to do the work and fill that gap. And C, I think there's like a relational piece too of like, oh gosh, like it's only 10 or 15 or 20 people. And like now I got to deal with so-and-so. And like, it's just a lot more proximate, you know, like rather than like a big company, you know, it's maybe a bit easier to be sort of callous and not as connected to the person. I want to move us into just like learning a bit more about the work that you do. I mean, I guess first things first, like, you know, would love to learn more about 360 Data. Do you call it 360 Data Solutions or just Data?
Data 360.
Data 360. So, and I know it's like dot solutions is the website, right? So in my head, I keep wanting to say.
Yeah, we actually have a new site, data360network.com. So people
got it. Okay. More. Well, I mean, yeah, tell us a bit more about Data 360 and your co-founder. So would love to hear about your process for and your inspiration behind creating it, you know, kind of where did it stem from, and what was your ultimate goal when you were setting it up?
Yeah, well, initially, my co-founder and I were working for a nonprofit, and I was working for the wife and he was working for the husband. And we started talking, and he was building his insurance business. And he thought, oh, I'd make a great insurance agent with him. And eventually I had to break it to him that, yes, I'm a scientist, actually. And I do all this crazy tech stuff, and just went to one of the insurance meetings. I saw they were using like index cards to write down information, like pens, right? Paper. Yep. And I was like, whoa, why are y'all doing that? Like, why is there not like a CRM system, like messaging app? What are y'all doing? And then later I was like, okay, let me just show you Slack. Right? And Slack had just come out. Slack was like brand new.
Yeah.
I was like, let me show you Slack. And let me just show you like how you can share information that way. And then I took him to a WeWork, right? And like WeWork was just coming out in Los Angeles. It was brand new. And saw this like new universe with like these giggers, and like Uber and Lyft were taking off. And that's just all this. It was just sort of this kind of time when everything was sort of like this whole gig economy was really happening, apps were happening, and he was like, I'm all in, that's it, I'm doing whatever you're doing. And then we just started kind of going on the adventure of walking to Starbucks every day, meet with clients and talking to people we knew, and seeing what was possible, and then branching out from there. But our intention was to open up new economies. Really, we see ourselves as using data. Our mission and vision is expanding possibilities, and so we have a lot of empathy for people in building out automated systems that can teach them how to build up a company or build up an audience or build up different things. And that's all data driven, right? Data is like the fuel for all software. Our mission is to really expand their possibilities by becoming data literate and using software properly and learn how to be tech literate and all those fun things. And so that was our main reason, and especially for Black and Brown people, we're particularly behind, you know, as that one article you sent said, you know, 5% of Black women are involved in STEM, AI. I mean, I would say STEM because AI is probably 0.0000. I know I'm one of the few. I mean, I think there's like literally 100 of us or a couple hundred of us, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, the data is pretty pretty overwhelming. Well, love to hear, what's your favorite success story? Like, from how long have y'all been in business?
We've been in business 8 years. I'd say my favorite one, if I have a couple of favorites, but one of them is we built an algorithm inside of Facebook, or sort of trained an algorithm in Facebook to help this client win. They got $28,000 on their Kickstarter in 2 weeks.
Okay.
With no intervention.
And what exactly did the algorithm do?
It just recruited us. So it recruited all the people. So we loaded the content in, it recruited all the people, and it sent all the people over to Kickstarter, and all the people converted. So within 2 weeks, right, it's sort of a miracle, right, for him, because one is it happened in December.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
During Christmas time.
That's really hard. Yeah.
It was not a Christmas product.
Right.
It was a vegan dried lentil product.
Okay.
So even Kickstarter, when we told that to them, they were like, whoa, who the heck are you? And what happened there? Like, how did that happen? Because that is like impossible that some vegan Kickstarter. So for him, you know, he didn't have to lift a finger. He'd go on with his day.
Right.
We took care of everything. His agency didn't have to lift a finger. She went on with her day.
Mm-hmm.
And it was incredible. Right. And we've also done some things where we've helped a nonprofit, for example, like they spent $16 million on a program and they didn't know whether the money was spent effectively or not. And so we actually had to go out to the whole internet, and when I say the whole internet, I mean the data behind the internet, not just the front end side. So our business basically works by licensing over 28,000 APIs, which means that we have a lot, you know, trillions and trillions of records that we have access to at any given point. And so we were able to find all their people, trace them geographically, talk about how their network evolved, and tell them how their money was spent. And it was nothing like what they had supposed, right? They just kind of like made up a story about how it goes. And we're able to send that into a, you know, a very well-known, powerful foundation.
I mean, that's big, like being able to tie, someone who used to raise money in a nonprofit context, like being able to tie it to, okay, we drove people, you know, we got you traffic, but we also got you conversions. We got you dollars in the door. Like that is one of the most valuable, or probably arguably the most valuable result, you know, for that particular type of campaign. So kind of the flip side of that last question, what do you think has been your biggest challenge when building Data 360?
Besides racism and sexism.
Yeah, setting those tiny things aside.
Setting those two aside. I would say, you know, the biggest thing has been really waiting for the AI conversation to emerge. You know, we've been in this 8 years, we've been talking about AI and data forensics, data analysis, data management for a long time. Now that it's in the public conversation, you know, I would say I've had more easy conversations than we've ever had in years. And we're seeing the revenue lift based on that conversation.
Yeah.
It's happening now.
Do you feel like we've like turned a corner in like the last year, I guess, with ChatGPT and stuff? Or
yeah, and we knew the corner was coming because of some conversations we've had with Microsoft and with Google, because we're partnered with both those organizations. We knew it was coming. When COVID happened, the whole world just sort of got put on pause. So we've spent, you know, it was interesting. We spent sort of 3 years in this zone of doing a lot of work around digital literacy and not being able to really go forward with AI per se until these last 6 months, because people are just sort of stuck on, oh, I can't talk to people anymore face to face. So I need digital tools, but I need any digital tool. I don't need AI necessarily. I just need anything to work. So we wind up doing a lot of like remedial teaching during COVID. And that was a big hang up, but it actually also taught us a lot, because now we really deeply understand how deep the problem is with technology, and then looking at how can AI actually fill the gaps.
Yeah, in a way, like maybe the step back sort of, you know, caused people to kind of reassess a little bit, and like, you know, had we been moving as like quickly and sort of again like callously as we had been. But yeah, that's super interesting, and interesting to hear that just the timing of it, and how that sort of I hadn't thought about the way that COVID may have, or the pandemic, or the response to the pandemic, like may have delayed, you know, some of the onset of those things. So that's super interesting to hear. I guess too, you know, be curious, like you touched on this a little bit earlier in your last response, but like navigating the industry that you're in as a woman of color, like What would you say is your biggest takeaway? And what sort of, not advice, but like, you know, I guess sort of, we like to say like, what's worked for you, you know, as sort of a woman of color navigating the industry that you're in?
I have to just like show up everywhere, you know, like fully show up and fully be myself.
Hmm.
And absolutely 1,000% know that everything that I am is okay. And everything I put forward is okay. Because there's so many people waiting to kind of get in there and like mess with your self-confidence. And I think that's it's really true of everybody, but they specifically do it to women of color and Black women, those microaggressions. So I think, you know, just knowing I'm 1,000% okay, nothing I'm saying is off or wrong or needs to be thought about more. Just having that true confidence has been everything. And then, you know, being able to work in these, you know, unknown communities, you know, communities behind the scenes and get resources from other women in the field, talk to other women who have been successful, ask for the meetings I need to ask for, join the programs I need to join so that, you know, we can move forward. It's sort of tedious. I know I wouldn't be doing it if I was a white male. I wouldn't be doing all this extra resourcing things. But what's been helpful is it also helps me see quite a bit of chunk of the world, right? And what the problems are. And as an engineer, I can sort of go, oh, we can use our solution to solve that problem, or we can get a partner to solve that problem. Or I kind of see like ways that we can reinvent how business runs, right? How economies grow, how startups get made, how projects get analyzed, how corporations do innovation. There's so many things we can touch, which are super interesting because we've had this really grounded experience with the public. It's been amazing. So, you know, we have probably about a couple million people in our network.
It's funny you mentioned too, like that. I think the network thing, it's something we realized we're 3 years in. I mean, we're not as far along as y'all are, but like you come to realize like if you really are intentional and thoughtful about how you build your networks, like you're building almost like a marketplace for yourself, right? So you've got clients, potential clients, existing clients, and you've also got like talent that you can bring in. So you've got the demand and the supply, and you can kind of like harness those if you're smart about it, you know. And I appreciate you saying that in terms of like, yes, like think about how you build it, think about how you position yourself, because if you do it right, you know, you can start to like, you know, harness that fire, as it were, of both demand and supply and leverage it.
Yeah, and you don't have to worry about just begging for your supper every day.
Oh yeah,
with financiers, it's really nice.
It gets easier. Yeah, totally. I mean, we've been, especially like recently, like we, you know, we had a bit of a downturn, and you know, obviously it was recession hit and stuff like that, and then we bounced back really quickly. And it was like, I think in part because we had sort of started to establish ourselves and get referrals, and like, you know, we didn't have to hustle and reach as far for new work and things like that. So I think we were a little bit surprised by that, but we're like, yeah, like this should be easier after 3 years. You know what I mean? Like we have case studies, like we've done good work, you know? So yeah, appreciate you. You bring that perspective about networks in there. I'm going to ask you again to do the impossible, which is like set aside sexism and racism for a second. But
okay.
I want to tweak this question about your biggest frustration within your industry. Cause like, I'd be interested in your answer to this from like a technical perspective. And you mentioned waiting for AI to turn the corner, but I'd be curious, like on the more product side, the more technical side, what would you say has been, you know, a big frustration in terms of like the, you know, the there and like the gist of the work that you do on the product side? What's frustrated you the most?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is just like all the investment. You know, there's so much competition between all the different platforms. Right, Microsoft, Google, Nvidia, Amazon, IBM, all these different ones. You know, it's like learning 8 different languages simultaneously, right? Because each one has their kind of own paradigm, own way of being, that sort of thing. And as a service provider and as a developer, it becomes a little bit, I think, tedious, right? Having to learn so much about each entity without them making it a little bit easier. And I think, I shouldn't say, I think I know that they're trying to make it better. I do know that. I actively see those efforts, and I know you'll probably hear this one day. I know they're trying to make it better. It's just been built up with these walls of insiders, right? And so it's not that I can't get inside. I can get inside just fine. It's a lot of time, right? And then if you, as a person of color, right, I can't help but bring this part in, you don't have all the financing to sit there and learn unfettered and, you know, unlimited learning time, right? While somebody pays for your next 10 years of life with financing, it makes it incredibly difficult to do that because you have to survive, right? And you have to get money through the door, and it's not through financing, it's through revenue. That's very different. So that, you know, my frustration is just kind of like it's not that it's not easy. It's much easier than it has ever been in my 30-year career. It's easier. It's not that it's not inclusive. It is more inclusive than it's ever been in my 30 years of a career. It's a matter of just that lift of getting into a process or into a product is a little bit onerous.
Well, let me ask you one of the questions that we like to ask every guest. It's like one of my favorite questions, but like, what's one problem that tech can't solve for us and why?
Compassion. Tech can give us empathy, but it can't give us compassion. And I think as a planet, start believing in compassion more than we believe in power.
What's the distinction you're making between compassion and empathy there?
So I would say empathy, you can see other people, you can hear their stories now, thanks to technology, but it doesn't mean that you're going to have compassion for them.
Compassion, you're saying, is more active, more like you're doing something in response?
Yeah, it means like you're accepting that truth.
Yep.
And you're allowing that truth to affect your world.
Yeah, yeah. Fair. Yeah. Okay. Well said. I like that distinction.
Right. Versus like a lot of people think empathy is enough. Like, I hear the story, I see the story, and I acknowledge the story exists. That's great.
Yeah.
But the story has to change.
Totally.
Your actual actions and paradigm and the way the world functions, and that change is what everybody's resisting right now.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most, and it's like something I'm working on the side, is like a kind of a tech product to like push people more in that direction of like measurable, observable change that they've taken as a result of, you know, maybe you've listened to a podcast, or you read an article, or you did a VR experience that taught you, you know, about, actually something we're trying to do with the British Red Cross, like a VR AR experience about what it's actually like for migrants to come to a country like the UK, for example. But what action are you taking on the back of that? And how are you integrating that, as you said, into your life, like continually? So I think that's really well said. That's a great answer. Last question. We like to ask this everyone kind of at the end, but like, what's worked well for you in terms of, you know, building a career that balances both profit and purpose?
Meditation, my spirituality has really balanced me out. Being able to unplug and go hug a tree, not to be labeled a tree hugger, but
true California.
Right on. Yeah. You know, go to the desert or, you know, sit by a campfire, like that kind of stuff, like the ability to unplug. I haven't done it well recently, just from building the company. But that's where I'm going as a person.
Right.
Again, you know, for probably the fourth time in my life, in terms of just unplugging and meditating and taking care of myself, because I've just been on this like growth ramp and not taking care of myself.
Yeah.
As well as I could.
Yeah. It's so easy to get on that loop and just like you're hustling, you're not taking care of yourself, and you're thinking that it's going to like allow you to keep making money and you make more and all that stuff. And then you're like, wow, I'm just absolutely, you know, knackered, as it were. So I'm constantly like shocked and surprised by like the diversity of the things that could fall under meditation, and how, you know, like how little attention gets paid to that, and like how meditation can take so many different forms and serve so many different functions. I think that's really fascinating. So appreciate you bringing that in. We'll have to do an episode on meditation and as it relates to tech.
Yeah, let's do it.
Marie Smith, Chief Information Officer, CIO, and co-founder at Data360. We are very excited to have you on. This has been a great chat about all things AI and data and bias. And yeah, just really appreciate your time. And great to hear about your experience as a business owner. And just keep doing what you're doing. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks, Paul. Looking forward to talking more.
Absolutely. And where can folks find you on the interwebs? How do they find you and your company?
If you type in Marie Data360, pretty much on Instagram, LinkedIn, those are the two spots I'm on personally. And then Data360 Network or Data360 Solutions is also on Instagram, YouTube, now TikTok. We just started our TikTok. Medium, Twitter,
all the major platforms.
LinkedIn. Yeah, all the platforms except Snap. Sorry, Snap is our partner. We will get there.
Sorry.
We're almost there.
All good. Well, cool. We'll be sure to add those links to the episode description. And yeah, Marie Smith, we really appreciate your time today. And for folks listening, please don't forget to rate, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, please, so we can keep bringing great guests like Marie onto the pod. Thanks again, Marie. Appreciate your time today.